Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal, Özil. Marca Mesut Özil. Alexis, en el descuento ha marcado el Arsenal, como viene siendo habitual esta temporada. Gol de Alexis, 1-0 Arsenal.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello there and welcome to another Arscast Extra, a cheery, festive Arscast Extra with James from Gunnerblog. Hello.
Hello.
How has your festive season been?
It was good up to a point. I had a lovely Christmas day, but sadly Christmas night, so the night of Christmas Day, I came down with what I can only assume was the norovirus. It may have been a curse.
What's the norovirus?
It is a winter bug that involves the evacuation of one's body by any means necessary.
From every orifice?
Every single one. Ears, nostrils. It was quite extraordinary.
That sounds jolly pleasant.
Yeah, it lasted for 24 hours. Boxing Day was a write-off. I wasn't able to go to the QPR game as I was supposed to, but I have fully recovered. But other than that, it was terrific. What about you?
Well, it's good for weight loss too, isn't it?
Well, literally, it was a zero-calorie Christmas.
mine was fine, yeah. Lots of sitting around and eating and drinking and watching terrible movies, really. Mrs. Vlogs decided that she wanted to watch all the Lord of the Rings is again. So, kind of sat there and watched Lords of the Ringses.
Did that fairly recently. The third one doesn't end, does it?
There's about 15 endings. It's over, finally. And then they have another ending. Another one. But I tell you what, though. That Frodo is a complete cunt.
What makes you say that?
Well, you know the way he's gone on this quest, a very difficult quest, and nobody would suggest that the quest was anything other than treacherous and frankly, ridiculously dangerous, right? Mm-hmm. But he's got his pal there, Samwise Gamgee.
Yeah.
Right? They're supposed to be friends. Not once in the entire 18 hours of those movies does he say to his friend, "Hey, look, you don't have to call me Mr. Frodo. Let's drop the formality, and you can just call me Frodo." Not once. He insists on being Mr. Frodo the whole way through.
In the director's cut, extended edition, there's actually a scene where Sam calls him Frodo, and Frodo slaps him and spits in his face.
"You cheeky fucking fat bastard," he said.
Exactly.
And I tell you, Mrs. Bloggs made a very good point as well. The biggest cunt of all is Gandalf.
Why?
Well, you know, at the end... we can do spoilers, right?
I think so.
You know, at the end where they've eventually got rid of the ring into Mount Doom and they're lying on this one rock that hasn't been consumed by lava.
Yeah.
And Gandalf comes flying in on some gigantic eagles, lifts them up, takes them away out of Mordor, and off they go. And why didn't he just give them a couple of eagles in the first place?
Good question.
They could have just swooped over, plopped the ring in. There'd be none of all this, getting consumed by the evil of the ring. And that would have been that. Sauron would have been fucked from the off. They could have gone and had second breakfast.
If only you'd been there.
They needed a strategist. That was the one thing they were missing. They were great at archery, at magic, at being small people with horrible feet, but they did not have good strategy. So there you go.
The Fellowship was a man light, it transpires.
Yeah, so there you go. Well, now that we've torn that apart, we should move on to football, right?
Okay.
Queen's Park Rangers, you obviously watched through your evacuations.
Indeed, yeah.
It was all going very well, very comfortably, even though we should have been, probably a bit further ahead than we were. Mm. And at 1-0, Olivier Giroud, well, it was a moment of rank stupidity, really, I think.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, I think he knew straight away as well. If you look, watch the close-up replays, as soon as he does it, there's kind of an eye roll and a sigh of, oh, shit, what have I just done?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, how to what extent do you think Nedimonua sort of deserved it, really? I mean, he gave him that shove, didn't he, into the keeper, which could have been quite dangerous.
Yeah, it could have been, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, Anuha's reaction was pathetic, let's face it. But I think if you give a player in the modern game the opportunity to do that, considering the ref was on the blind side, so he couldn't really see whether or not Giroud had loafed him. I mean, it wasn't a headbutt. Let's make that clear. He just sort of pushed his forehead into his like a kind of stag or a ram of some kind. But, you know, it was a silly thing to do. If you want to take exception to the foul, I think that's absolutely fine, because it could have been dangerous, but look, it wasn't, and he could have complained to the referee, he could have complained to the player. It was absolutely daft, you know, and I thought it might have come back to bite us against West Ham, but didn't, thankfully. But it was, it was daft. You know, we can't really afford to be losing players for no good reason, especially when we've got all the other issues we have with injuries.
Yeah, well, you know, Arsene Wenger's kind of infamous for always defending his players and not seeing certain incidents, but the fact that he came out and pretty much condemned what Giroud did suggests that he was far from happy.
Nevertheless, without Giroud, Alexis Sanchez scored a goal and set up a goal for Thomas Rosicki, which was a nice little combo.
Yeah, remember him?
Yeah. It was
strange.
It was, yeah.
Strange seeing him out there.
His first start of the season, remarkable, considering it's almost January.
Yeah, that is crazy, isn't it? I mean, we've talked in the past about why that might be. One theory I heard doing the rounds this week was that maybe Arsene Wenger's holding him back for an explosive second half of the season. I don't know about that, but I think, you know, it's good to have him in the team. He brings that energy. He looked fit, which I suspect has been a problem over the last few months. Maybe he hasn't been quite as healthy as he might have been. And a goal, which is actually quite a rare thing from Rosicki.
Yeah, exactly. And a very, very important goal under the circumstances, because, you know, had we been pegged back to 1-1 with 10 men, it would really have been different, despite the fact that QPR are a bag of shit.
Yeah,
they really are. Junior Hoylett. I know the jokes are obvious, but I remember people suggested that we should buy him. But I don't understand how a professional footballer can get into the positions he gets in or got into the other night and continually just club the ball beyond the far post for a cross.
It's like not being able to take a corner.
It really is.
but he was. If he had been able to cross, I think we would have been in big trouble, because we actually didn't defend brilliantly against him. We allowed him to come back onto his superior right foot repeatedly, but he just kept
superior right foot.
Superior.
What?
Superior. I wouldn't say it was good. I'd say it was superior to his left foot.
Yeah, well, we can let people make their own minds of us to the quality of his left then.
But he just kept smashing it out of play, didn't he?
Yeah.
Very grateful for that. Very grateful. And they, in the first half, were
Thanks,
absolutely...
Thanks, Junior.
Indeed. They were absolutely woeful in the first half, I thought. Like, they just came resigned, I thought, to defeat. And they've lost every away game, and you can see why, because they went with one up top and they just didn't seem to have any kind of game plan until we went a man down.
Yeah, yeah. And even then, the game plan wasn't up to much. Arsene Wenger putting on defenders to defend the lead. Some people suggesting that, you know, perhaps under the circumstances it would be better to perhaps give Theo Walcott a run out, for example. What was your feeling on that? And I suppose in light of the West Ham game as well, we resorted to all the fullbacks.
Well, look, all the fullbacks worked pretty well last season.
Yeah.
Certainly in the first half of the campaign. So I haven't got any qualms with that. I feel a bit sorry for Theo Walcott, because I kind of wonder when he's ever going to get a chance. It seems that Arsene Wenger's waiting for kind of the right circumstances to introduce him. And because we're not winning games as comfortably as we might hope to be, those don't seem to be coming about. So he's just sat there on the substitutes bench. He's not going to get any closer to a starting level of fitness without these substitute appearances.
Yeah, but at the same time, I kind of, in the circumstances, I felt probably that there's still an issue with his fitness, that he's not quite 100% yet. I think the manager just before the QPR game said he's nearly there, so in 2 days he won't have been that much closer to it. I think had we been winning, let's say against Queen's Park Rangers 3-0 with 20 minutes to go, Walcott would have got a run out because there's no pressure, and you're not looking for him to bust his arse up and down the wing to defend like we would have been if he'd come on against Queen's Park Rangers. Against West Ham, maybe he could have got a run out. I think he was warming up, certainly. But I think, again, circumstances dictated that the manager decided, look, we've got a lead. We're defending pretty well. We're coping with what West Ham have got to give us. Let's shore it up. Let's be as stable as we possibly can be, because it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? Because if you go defensive and you see the game out, or you don't see the game out, people will accuse you, I've got that all wrong. If you put on an attacking player and you don't see the game out, people accuse you of being reckless or tactically inept, right? And I suppose the safety-first approach is probably the wisest, given how difficult we found it defensively in recent times.
And let's not forget, I mean, Theo Walcott's not great defensively, is he? He's no defender by any means.
No.
And I think, was it against Anderlecht? We were 3-0 up and we seemed to be cruising, and we actually brought on, I'm trying to remember, Podolski, wasn't it, and Rizitsky, and attacking players, and they came back into the game and Wenger took an absolute pelting for it. So I can't blame him for being conservative with his changes. But the thing is, for Walcott, it does extend that absence, because he's not going to come, you'd imagine, into the starting lineup for the next game at Southampton. It would be a big call, wouldn't it?
It wouldn't surprise me, actually.
Really?
Yeah, no, it wouldn't surprise me at all, to be honest. That if he's, he's sort of eased him back into the squad, and if he feels that the groin injury is now done and dusted, he might well start him against Southampton. I think probably he'd be a better bet from the bench, but what Arsene Wenger does with his squad, particularly this time of year when he hasn't had a chance to rotate, we've been looking at Alexis and saying he's got to rest him at some point, doesn't he? Because there were moments yesterday against West Ham, we'll touch on the game in greater detail now in a minute, but there were moments where Alexis was in fantastic positions, as always, but the decision-making struck me as that of somebody who is fatigued, physically and mentally. The passes weren't right, they weren't quick enough, and I know that's been a small issue with him in general, that sometimes he doesn't use the ball as well as he might, but in the last two games, I think we've seen him suffer the effects of fatigue and playing at a time of the year when he's not used to it. So the manager has got to be aware of that too, and maybe, I won't say Walcott is a like-for-like example, but maybe if he's going to play well back up top, he could put Walcott on the right-hand side.
Possibly. As I say, I'd be really surprised to see him start, but, second-guessing Arsene Wenger's becoming increasingly difficult. Just before we talk about the game itself, were you surprised that changes against West Ham weren't made earlier? It was 85 minutes before we made our first sub. Are you worried at all about the strain that's being put on those players in the first 11?
I think the difficulty for the manager is the fact that the team were playing pretty well, and that they were coping with what West Ham had to offer. And at the same time, we had outlets and we had chances and we were creating goal-scoring opportunities, So maybe Welbeck was a bit tired, but look at the run he made. Look at the chances that he had. Look at the impact he was having, that he was giving us something really positive when West Ham were pressing for an equaliser. So, yeah, I mean, I get that, but I suppose he was looking at it going, well, if I just keep them on, maybe we can get that third goal and put the game out of sight, because really we should have won that game more comfortably than we did.
Yeah, and I think as well, looking at the team and where you'd want to make changes, if the front three are all playing well and they're all quite defensively switched on, the area where you might want to make a switch is in central midfield, where players have tired legs. But looking at the subs bench we had at West Ham, there's not actually a central midfielder there.
No.
We've got Podolski, Walcott, Campbell and Akpom, four strikers out of the seven players on the bench. So, you know, there wasn't a huge amount that the manager could have done to sort of strengthen the defensive unit, apart from bringing on those fullbacks, which he did do.
And I think that was absolutely fine. And I think, you know, if people say it's inviting pressure, perhaps, but I think the natural momentum of a game is that when you're at home, when you're losing, when you're looking for a goal, you will pile on pressure. How many times have we seen it at our place where we've been looking for either a winner or an equaliser, and people say, why couldn't we play the second half the way we played the last 10-15 minutes? But it's just the momentum of a game. The opponents sit deep because they know there isn't much time to go. They don't want to get exposed. You can pile a bit more pressure on, and that's the way it goes. But overall, I thought it was a really quite encouraging performance. Obviously, defensively, we were quite solid with Mertesacker and Koscielny back in the side. And I was really, really impressed with Wojciech Szczęsny. The first cross that West Ham put in, I think it was a tester, was like a minute into the game. They lofted in a cross from the right-hand side looking for Andy Carroll. And I think had Szczęsny come and fumbled, or had Szczęsny not come and there was a bit of a scramble in the box, or Carroll had won his first header, you know, that just gives them a bit of belief. But he came, he was big and strong, and did it pretty much all day, a couple of moments aside. But I think his contribution to the defensive solidity was perhaps a little bit overlooked.
Yeah, I think so. And there were one or two moments a little bit hairier. But I think at West Ham, if you're going to go there and survive, your goalkeeper's got to have a great day. And Szczęsny did that. I think that his confidence was probably helped by the fact that he had his first choice centre-back pairing in front of him. We just looked so much more secure with Koscielny in there. And I think it boosts the confidence of all the players around him. And I think we saw that. Mertesacker was good as well. There was one header he beat Andy Carroll to at the far post that was a superb interception.
Yeah.
And in the game's final stages, he made a couple of good clearances. It's really telling how much better he looks, how much better Szczęsny looks. Debussy, I think, was beaten obviously on the goal, but generally acquitted himself well. Monreal appears to have toughened up somewhat after that spell at centre-half. So I thought they were encouraging signs defensively, and we did really well to hold on because West Ham were exerting some real pressure in those final stages and could easily have got something.
But I think what was encouraging as well was that from an attacking point of view, when they went, when they got their goal, that we didn't immediately shit our pants, which has been known to happen. We responded by creating a brilliant chance for Cazorla. I think people who were saying that Adrian, you know, however you want to say his name, made some great saves. I think maybe one was a good save, and the rest of them were kind of whacked straight at him. And that one with Cazorla that sort of rebounded off the underside of his arm. You know, though we've seen those many times go in. Oxlade-Chamberlain straight at him. I think the one down to his near post against Alexis, you know, you'd be really good at if your goalkeeper let that one in. So I think it was as much down to our poor finishing as good goalkeeping, but, you know, we responded in a very positive way.
Yeah, and I thought the front four linked really well. Not for the first time this season that combination has clicked quite effectively, those players. And on the break, we had real threat, as you'd expect, the pace of Alexis, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Welbeck, and should probably have been out of sight. There was a point where, you know, after the third or fourth miss, you thought, well, this is going to cost us, isn't
it? Yeah, it did feel like that. You know, the chances we missed would come back to bite us in the arse, but thankfully
not. What about the Alex Song goal we've not touched on? What did you make of that, the disallowed goal?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because that's twice that's happened to us in not too long a time, because there was one against Swansea. Remember, it would have been 4-0 to Swansea. Was it Swansea? No, not
Stoke.
Swansea. Stoke, yeah. Would have been 4-0 to Stoke. And the goal was chalked off because there was a player in an active position who was offside. And I thought that was maybe a bit generous, and maybe yesterday was a little bit generous too, but you can't ignore the fact that the two West Ham players were offside. One of them made a motion, not so much at the ball, but to let the ball through his legs, and I think that that made him very active. So, yeah, I mean, they're given and they're not, you know? I think we got a little bit lucky.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I think the Stoke one was actually an incorrect decision. I think that goal should have stood. I think the West Ham one is the correct decision, but you're still lucky to see it given.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 9 times out of 10, the referee doesn't spot that. But I did enjoy Alex Song's quick reversion from not celebrating to protesting the decision. Yeah.
That made me laugh, I have to say. Yeah. I've got so much respect for this club, I won't celebrate. Wait a minute, why aren't you giving the goal? God damn you! What did you make of him in general yesterday? He's been somebody who's got a lot of plaudits for West Ham, but I don't think he was particularly good.
I thought he was okay. I mean, I didn't think he was great. The player I've been talking up was Winston Reid, and he had an absolutely terrible game.
That was hilarious as well, wasn't it? Going, how can you possibly have given a penalty, even though I stuck my leg up in the air and tripped him, obviously.
I mean, that seemed to be the rage of a man who knew he'd got something very, very wrong and was desperately trying to cover it with a ferocious protest in the style of Jose Mourinho. But he had an awful game, I thought, which was... interesting ahead of the January transfer window.
So what does that performance what does it make for your desire to sign him?
To be honest, it doesn't actually make a massive difference because I've never necessarily been convinced that Winston Reid's a world-class defender. It's more a question that I'm just not sure if there are that many world-class defenders available in January. And I do think he might still be a sensible purchase. I think he had a bad game, but I don't think he's a bad player.
Mm. I used to have a dog called Winston.
Did you?
Yeah.
What about Wenger getting his cock out?
He does love getting his cock out from time to time, but that's something I think we'll touch on in part two in the questions, because quite a number of people have sent in questions about that. So why don't we wait for that?
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, that's the end of part one. We're going to take a short break. We're back with your questions after this and the winner of the Savile Road competition from the main Arscast just before Christmas. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. Now, before we get on with your questions, as sent to us very kindly on Twitter, I want to do the winner of the Savile Road competition, which was on the Arscast just before Christmas. Because of the weirdness of the week that's in it, we're playing on Thursday, so there's unlikely to be an Arscast on Friday because New Year's Day, well, I'm probably not going to be in any fit state to record an Arscast, and the game is just will be just taking place that day. So we're going to do the winners of the £75 voucher as given to us by our friends at Savile Rogue. That's Savile-Rogue.com. The random number generator picked out Ray Flaherty and Craig Congdon. So Ray Flaherty and Craig Congdon, well done to you. You get two £75 vouchers to spend on anything you like at the Savile Rogue website. So check out Savile-Rogue.com. It's got cold, so it's time for all their warm goodness. It's freezing over here today.
It's pretty cold here as well.
Right. Okay, well, questions time. And they're sent to us, as always, on Twitter, at Gunnerblog and at Arsblog. And James, the first one today comes from Gunnar DS. That's Gunnar underscore DS, because there's probably a Gunnar DS somewhere out there.
Bastard.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, given his performance yesterday, do you think Coquelin has any chance to become our first choice DM?
Will he be anointed as the saviour of the Arsenal midfield?
Indeed.
Well, it was nice, as I said earlier, to see Wenger get his cock out, especially in front of Sam Allardyce, I thought. That added a particular flavour to it.
Flavour, eh? This is going wrong very quickly.
Well, he's not the biggest, is he? But he's always up for the fight, which I do like. But I think I don't think he is the long-term solution by any stretch of the imagination. I think that it was a question of necessity. As I pointed out earlier, there was not another central midfielder in the matchday squad. I suppose Oxlade-Chamberlain could have played there at a push, but it seems that's not really considered an option. We haven't seen Callum Chambers yet there either, despite Wenger's suggestion he could play there. But I think if a player has been out at Freiburg, been out at Charlton, I just can't see it that they're going to become a Champions League player suddenly at this stage of their career. So I don't envisage him doing that in the long term. What I do think is it might mean that he stays around for the remainder of this season, which I think at one time was probably quite unlikely.
Hmm.
What about you?
I think what his performance showed was the benefit of a player with that kind of mindset and that skill set. You know?
What's the difference between Coquelin and Flamini? If any, just out of interest. Or do you think it's the benefit of having two or what?
I think it could be the benefit of having two, to be honest. I'm not sure that Coquelin is physically the monster that people want. You know, he's a decent player. But I think the point that you made about him being sent on loan to Freiburg, to Charlton, it suggests that Arsene Wenger has made his mind up about him in terms of his long-term prospects. He seems a nice chap. He put in a really good shift yesterday. But I think what the manager thinks of him is pretty obvious. But what I do think is that when we saw what he could bring to the team yesterday, or the option to play two players like that, maybe that's something that the manager, you know, can look at and say, right, well, that is kind of a gap in my squad.
Yeah, I think that's the most optimistic outcome, I guess, is that Arsene Wenger looked at Coquelin's performance and doesn't think, I have found the answer, but instead thinks, I need someone a bit like that, but better.
Yeah.
Because Coquelin will be 24 before the end of this season.
Is he that old already?
Yeah, yeah. So right. I do feel that, like, if he was going to have made the step, I think it would have happened before now.
Mm.
But I do think that is a massive gap in the squad. It's one we've talked about plenty. And I think it would be great if we could bring someone in that position. As ever, I'm not confident about it. But I think he's an interesting player, sort of unusually for an academy product of Arsenal. He really does seem to enjoy some of those nastier aspects of the game. He likes tackling. I think that's clear when watching him play. He enjoys the scrap. But that's sort of only half the battle, I think, for Arsenal. I feel like, in terms of the defensive midfielder we need, we've got someone in Flamini already who likes those kind of feisty elements of the game. But we also need someone who's got more of what Arteta has, which is tactical intelligence and awareness, positional discipline, and an ability to playmate to an extent, to take the ball off the back four and start off attacking moves. We kind of need a composite of those players, really, and I'm not sure Coquelin's able to do all those things sufficiently to win that place.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Could well be an option for the rest of the season or until the end of January, depending on what happens. But in the very long term, I don't think it's going to happen for him. So, right.
Shall we have another question?
Yes, let's.
Okay, let's do that. That's what we usually do.
It's what we normally do.
It'd be strange to sort of, you know, break the mould at this stage.
Just have one question. That wouldn't be giving people value for their money.
No, exactly. We'd hate that. All the refunds flooding in.
I know.
Okay, well, this question comes from Jane Cavendish, JCav90 on Twitter. And she asks, will Wenger revert to 4-1-4-1 when he gets all his attacking midfielders back?
Oh, there's a question. I hope not, because I think what we've seen is that we're probably better balanced the way we are at the moment. And the team, I think we said this pretty much from the start of the season, that the team seems much more comfortable playing with the system that they've been used to over the last couple of seasons. I never quite understood the change, you know. I know he said that it was to give us greater solidity in big games. But, you know, I just...
It seemed more to me like a way to get Ozil, Ramsey and Wilshere into the same team.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And I think what we've seen is that when we've got players like Welbeck and Alexis in the team, that we've got, when we've got a player in that middle position like Cazorla's doing right now, you know, who can play make a little bit, who can find those runs, that we are much more effective as an attacking unit. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see how he fits Ozil back into the team when he is fit, though, because Cazorla is playing absolutely brilliantly at the moment.
Yeah, well, Kim Everett actually asked, given the Santi resurgence, wither Ozil when he's fit? Which I wanted to include partly because I really like the word wither.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah,
it's
thanks, Kim.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what do you think on that?
I don't know. I mean, ideally, you'd want Ozil playing where Cazorla's playing. But Santi's playing so well. It really is. But I think probably Santi is also good on the left-hand side, that he can do a better job there than Ozil can, I think. I mean, I don't think it's his best position, but if you want to put the two of them in the same side, I would keep Ozil central and Cazorla could go on the left. That'd be one way of doing it. But the manager has obviously looked at what Germany did in the World Cup, and they played Ozil down the left, and I don't know. But it'd be interesting.
It will be very interesting. Do you think in the last couple of games we've won 2-1, but it's been quite fine margins towards the end of matches. Do you think that's somewhere where we've missed Ozil in terms of potentially controlling a game and helping almost see it out just by keeping possession? Do you think he'll help in that respect?
Maybe. I mean, I think the contribution you'd be looking for him to make is to ensure that games aren't quite that tight at the end.
Ideally,
so you'd want him to make an attacking contribution. But, you know, I think it has been noticeable in some of the games where late on, when you're looking, for example, Liverpool, when all Arsenal needed to do was show a bit of composure and get on the ball and keep possession, that we didn't really have anyone who could do that, who could just put their foot in the ball and find a pass and look for a pass back. So I think perhaps in those circumstances, yeah, he could be an asset, but I think is the contribution you want from him is to create chances and for those chances to be taken by the strikers.
Yeah, I think Arteta's probably a big loss in that respect as well. When's he coming back? Any idea?
No, could be... Could be sometime.
2018.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arseblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arseblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arseblog.
Yeah.
Well, Arsene Wenger said Arteta's doing well. He's making progress. He's had a little setback. Nice. Which is the most...
His leg has fallen off.
Yes. So we're just sourcing a new leg. It's got to be flown in from the Basque region. Because, you know, he's got to stay fully Basque. I think he'll be back in a couple of weeks. I think.
Okay. Interesting.
All right. Here's a question from Marco Fuchs. It's at Wanderlust Marco. It touches on Podolski maybe going to Inter Milan. He says, with Podolski gone to Inter, reports from German media, what do you think about the move? Bearing in mind that we're still dealing in hypotheticals. And is it a chance for Joel Campbell? So let's touch on Podolski first. What do you think? I mean, the manager was asked about it yesterday at his press conference.
Yeah, did you see it?
I didn't have a chance to look at it yet.
It was sort of interesting. He was asked about Podolski, and they said, oh, did you... There was some reports that you had a meeting with Inter Milan yesterday, and he didn't deny those. He just said, oh, there's nothing concrete. And then he said, but, you know, Mesut Ozil's coming back and there's a lot of competition up front. And several journalists, as soon as Wenger walked out of the room, turned to each other and said, well, Podolski's gone then.
Yeah.
It was kind of that kind of vibe. I've always maintained I think he'll go, and I think he probably will. What do I think about it? I kind of think it's just inevitable. I know people will say keep him around because he's a good finisher, but I'm not sure how much use that is when he's barely on the pitch. Mm. There's only one circumstance in which Arsene Wenger seems to be prepared to use him, and that is chasing a game in the last 10 minutes. And I think we'll be all right without him. I think that it just hasn't worked for him. I don't think he's got an established place in the side or even in the squad. So I don't really see another solution, and I think that with players coming back to fitness, his opportunities are going to be even more limited.
Yeah, but I mean, given that we are prone to the odd injury here and there, now I know that could be shocking news to some people. What is the benefit to us of loaning Podolski to Inter Milan? Like, if we sell him in the summer, for example, and get 5 or 6 million quid for him, there's a benefit there in that we have got financial reward, or we've got more money to put towards somebody else who would fit better into the squad. And I agree with you that the system we play and the way that Podolski plays is not suited to this Arsenal side. Regardless of formation changes or anything like that, he still doesn't really fit in any fixed position. But would we not be better off just keeping him until the end of the season? Because who knows? You know, he has been effective sometimes when brought on, chasing a game. Think about Anderlecht away. I remember West Ham last year, where we were, I think it was 1-1, was it? Maybe 1-0, I can't remember. We were losing, and Podolski came on and scored one and assisted one for Walcott. You know, so the other options that we have, particularly when it looks like Sonogo's going to go on loan, Giroud's legs could break at any time by the wind blowing too strongly on them. You know, I don't really understand what the benefit is to us of loaning out Podolski.
Well, I'd be a lot more comfortable if we'd seen Theo Walcott play some minutes, I have to say. Because obviously, I guess Walcott returning to fitness is effectively what will bump Podolski down the pecking order. But obviously we haven't seen Walcott yet, so a setback could happen, and that is worrying. Why are they doing it now? I don't know. I guess because the players probably made it clear that he's unhappy with the situation. That doesn't prevent Arsene from saying, no, you can't go. And I'd certainly rather we were getting a transfer fee for him than letting him go on loan. That does seem like an odd aspect of this deal. You'd like to think financial considerations aren't part of it, but Podolski is one of the higher earners at Arsenal, so maybe that is a factor. You know, we know that Wenger likes to keep a close eye on the wage bill. Maybe he doesn't see it as efficient to be paying someone that much to do very little.
He does seem to have lost pretty much all faith in him, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, for me, if I was the Arsenal manager, I would probably keep Podolski around because I do think he's the best finisher in the squad. But I don't really see the point in keeping him when the guy who is in charge clearly doesn't believe in him.
Here's an interesting one. I'm reminded, you know, of the FA Cup final after we'd won, and I was sitting with somebody who knows people at the club, shall we say, and Podolski chased after Arsene Wenger with a bottle of champagne and soaked him to the skin, that he had to change his shirt, get his nipples out at Wembley in front of the TV cameras, the whole lot. Arsene with his Mr. Muscle physique. And that particular gentleman turned to me and said, oh, he won't like that, Arsene Wenger. Yeah. He won't like that. So do you think that bottle of champagne, or could even have been Budweiser, couldn't it, in a champagne-y bottle?
Yeah.
Could that have done for Podolski's Arsenal career?
It all came back to the nipples.
All came back to the nipples.
But then Arsene was out all summer flaunting them across Brazil. wasn't he?
Was he topless, though? Was he? I thought, you know, he was wearing some T-shirts. Maybe he was showing off his pins. The old
maybe he was wearing T-shirts.
The old legs, you know, but he wasn't.
My imagination playing tricks on me again.
you're seeing what you want to see.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about my dreams live on air.
Yeah.
No, maybe. I mean, I don't know. It just feels like, I don't know, something went wrong for Podolski. I mean, if you think about the FA Cup final, I've just looked back and he was actually withdrawn after an hour, a quite poor hour, as I recall.
Yeah, he was not very good.
For Yaya Sanogo.
Mm.
So maybe the writing was on the wall then. I mean, he was playing games at the end of last season, but only because I think we didn't really have anybody else, I seem to recall. And
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, it is an odd. So you would keep him, would you?
I think I'd keep him till the end of the season because he could be handy. Like, I don't think he's a first-team starter, but what I think is that he adds a bit of depth to the squad, some finishing ability. If you need a goal in the last 15, 20 minutes of a game, you know, who would you have more faith in scoring from nothing? Because he is capable of just, like, doing nothing and then scoring a goal, a cracking goal.
Yeah, he's a great finisher.
Whereas you wouldn't get that perhaps from Campbell. You wouldn't get it from Sanogo, certainly. I just think that squads need depth. Now, we've got plenty up there, but we thought we had plenty in midfield too, and all of a sudden we've got to get our cock out. So,
and we definitely wouldn't be bringing anyone in to replace him, I wouldn't imagine.
No, I couldn't see that. Unless he wants maybe, you know, to give that place in the squad to Akpom.
Well, I thought it was interesting that he made the bench at West Ham. I don't know if that's just a case of numbers. You know, I didn't look at it in detail. But Akpom, I think, am I right in saying his contract's up at the end of the season?
Yeah, so I believe.
So maybe he does feel he needs to start including him in the squad in order to convince him to sign a new deal.
The Podolski saga, the mystery of Lucas and everything that's going on.
And what about the
know.
Second half of that question, Joel Campbell?
Go for it.
Well, no, I'm just saying the second half of the question was, will Campbell get a chance if Podolski goes?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Go for it. What do you think?
Oh. I thought he'd go as well, to be honest, Joel Campbell. I think in some ways, if Sanogo goes out and Podolski goes out, I think we have to keep Campbell, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe he will get more opportunities. It's a really weird one, Campbell. It's another one where Arsene Wenger seemed in the summer to make a decision to keep him without any great sense of how he was going to use him, which is actually quite unlike the manager. Usually he's very tight on how he builds his squads and quite keen that everyone will get playing time. But in this instance, it just doesn't seem to have applied.
No.
I think inevitably, if Sanogo and Podolski go out, Campbell will have to stay. So there will be opportunities for him, especially if we can muster a run in the FA Cup. But it'll still be well down the pecking order behind, you know, the likes of Walcott and Welbeck.
Mm. All right. Let's have another question.
This question comes from Matt Dalton, 97.
All right.
And he asks, what do you make of Danny Welbeck's time at Arsenal so far?
Well, that's interesting because I had another question, which was quite similar. I think it's been pretty reasonable. I think he's probably not scored as many goals as he should have, but he has scored some important goals, some interesting goals. I think he gives us options that we need in certain games. You look at what he did yesterday, for example, that outlet, that pace and power. I mean, I don't think he's ever going to be a 30-goal-a-season striker.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he, if we talk about having squad depth and we talk about Podolski, that he's one of those players as well that gives us that, and maybe a bit more because he's got a sort of a combination of finishing, of pace and power. I think we'll see more from him. Maybe he's struggling a little bit being sort of shifted left and right. But, you know, I think the manager's deployment of his forwards is quite fluid, isn't it? Because yesterday, Alexis started as a centre forward,
yeah,
and Welbeck was on the left. But by the end of the game, actually by midway through the first half, Welbeck was the centre forward. So, yeah, I mean, I've been quietly impressed. I think there's more to come, or there should be more to come from a player of his talent. Yeah, overall, I would give him a solid B.
Solid B.
Yeah.
I think he's been. I think he's been good, to be honest. I think given that our backs really were to the wall on deadline day, and we didn't have a centre forward, you know, to speak of, the fact that we got him in was a huge boost, and I think he's been important. As you say, the number of goals isn't great, but there've been some significant ones in there, a few winners and an equaliser against Hull. I think he needs to score more if he wants to play regularly. I think he probably knows that. You know, I think yesterday the West Ham game summed him up quite nicely. He had a very good game, I thought, offered a constant threat on the counter-attack, scored a decent goal, but then got that chance where there was that loose back pass and he raced onto it and he put it over the bar.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually spoken about it to Arsenal.com and he said he was disappointed with that. And I think that's where he needs to improve. That hasn't changed. You know, at Manchester United, he was a promising player who lacked a bit of composure. Just because he's wearing an Arsenal shirt, that's not going to go away. It's going to take a bit of time. But I've been really impressed. And I think, talking about Podolski, whether Podolski plays centre-forward or left-wing, you never feel he quite clicks or does enough, you know, for the team. Whereas Welbeck, wherever he plays, seems to be a fairly seamless fit with Arsenal. And I think that will always stand him in good stead and ensure he gets matches. I mean, a guy, Tiki Tekkers, wrote in saying, did you think his performance at West Ham suggests that Giroud's vocal presence is a bit of a shackle on him? Do you think there's anything in the fact that do you think he plays better without Giroud, or is that something you've noticed?
I don't know if we've seen enough of that, but I think, you know, they probably are vying for the same position, really.
I think so, yeah.
And I think what I can't remember what game it was, a few games ago anyway, he played a front three, could have been Newcastle, was it, where he played a front three of Alexis, Giroud and Welbeck, and it worked really well. Mm-hmm. And I think at times it can work well, depending on the opposition. And I'm not sure that Giroud shackles him as such, but Giroud can only play as a centre forward, whereas Welbeck has the ability to move wide left or wide right because of his pace and that side of his game, where Giroud doesn't. Giroud's more limited. So whether that's a negative for Welbeck or not, I don't know, because leaving aside the ridiculous red card, Giroud has been in pretty good form since he came back and has contributed quite well.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of happy to have the options, though. Do you know what I mean? Last season we were going, well, all we have is Giroud. Because Walcott was injured, we don't have any other options for centre-forward. Whereas now we can play three centre-forwards. You know, we can play Alexis as centre-forward, we can play Welbeck centre-forward, we can play Giroud centre-forward. At a push, we can play Walcott there when he's back. So I'm glad to have the options. The other thing that I'd say about Welbeck is that he is... I don't want to jinx him here, but then there's no such thing as jinxing. But he appears to be a fairly robust young man.
He's played a lot of games.
He's played pretty much every game since he arrived. Every game. That's where you call into question the goal scoring, that he should be doing more. And I think there have been chances that he's spurned. But also, I think if you were to go back and analyse the games, one of the things that sticks in my mind is Welbeck looking for passes that he doesn't get and being a little bit exasperated by them because he's in good positions. Normally, it's Alexis who doesn't spot the pass or chooses to go for goal himself. And look, he's amazing. And he, you know, scores a lot of goals and has made such a positive contribution. But I think that if he could be 10, 15% better with the ball, that he would just be just an unstoppable player because he would create more, even more. And it sounds churlish looking for that from Alexis because he's just been so positive and so brilliant and everything else. But I think Welbeck is one of the players who, I won't say suffers because of that, but when he partners with Alexis, he knows that Alexis is going to go for goal most of the time. And I think there have been moments where a better pass would have created a better chance for Welbeck.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And he is inevitably the secondary partner in that relationship. But also I think that he, you know, you talk about the runs he's making, not necessarily getting seen. He's perhaps missing Mesut Ozil and Jack Wilshere, with whom he seemed to be developing a decent understanding. You remember that Aston Villa game where he and Ozil clicked really well and barely played together again after that. So once they come back as well, I think we might see him getting, you know, those one-on-one chances where he seems most comfortable, really, more so than when the ball's pulled back to him or what have you. So I think he's done well for a good first 6 months, but still room for improvement.
Yeah. All right. Okay, here's one from at Steven CKC. And he says, the best 2014 memory is probably the FA Cup, but what would be your shittiest memory of 2014? Oh, I've taken it all the way down now, haven't I? This I should have rethought that question. What was the betterest memory than the FA Cup? No, okay, go on, do it.
I think the Chelsea game, I have to say. The 6-0. That was the low point for me. The low point in a year of several significant nadirs. But that was the lowest of the low. I can't top that. What about you?
Yeah, that was annoying. All right. I thought that the 1-0 defeat to Stoke really...
Oh, you really hate that one, don't you?
I fucking hate that game. Yeah. I don't know why. Probably because it's Stoke and, you know, it was a game we were expecting to do better in. You know, if you lose to Chelsea, fine. Not fine, but, you know, it's not too unexpected given our record in the big games. And to lose 6-0 was absolutely appalling. But that Stoke game just still makes me want to, do bad things to things. What else would be a bad one? I think the Everton game as well. The Everton game, and possibly the Walcott injury at the start of January. That was bad.
January
too.
3rd, I think that was. Yeah. So what about? I mean, this is miserable, isn't it? I was just going to list more. The Liverpool game wasn't great.
Yeah, that was terrible. Terrible. Remember that other thing that was really bad? That was awful.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that other, that time we did that stuff all wrong.
Yeah.
Remember?
Not good. What about other good points, Dave? FA Cup was definitely the highlight.
Oh, yeah.
Me.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And
anything
it's kind of amazing.
Close?
I don't know about running it that close, but I really did enjoy the run to the FA Cup final, apart from the semi-final.
The semi-final was nearly one of the low points. I mean, the point when we were losing the semi-final was the most sort of anguished and pained I've been watching Arsenal for many a year.
Yeah, because of the implications of that result would have been seismic.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the FA Cup, I don't know why people write it off, you know, for all the legitimate criticisms that there are of this club and of the manager and of the players and everything else, and there are loads of them, I don't know why you would dismiss something that was so fucking brilliant to hammer home your point when it doesn't need to be hammered home. You know, that way. People go, the FA Cup's not really a big trophy. Fuck that. It was brilliant. It was a brilliant day at Wembley or wherever you were watching it. And we saw all the videos of the bars around the world where people just had a fucking amazing time because we won a trophy. In ridiculously Arsenal circumstances, of course, but we won it all the same. And that's what it comes down to. Can't complain about, we haven't won anything, and then when we win something going well, it's not that good, is it? Yes, it is, and it was. So the FA Cup was clearly the best. I thought the summer as well, the early part of the summer where we signed Alexis Sanchez, where that, I remember we discussed it, didn't we, on one of the early Arscast extras, and you were talking about, he would be a fantastic fit, and we were saying that would be amazing, and then, wow, shit, it's happening. It's happening. This is real.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that part of the summer was great as well, because we knew Sanya was going, but we replaced him early with Debushi. We knew that Fabianski was going, and we got Ospina in, and then you get Alexis, £35 million from Barcelona. You're looking at him going, this is the fucking business. So that was a high point for me as well. And
And then the season happened.
And then the football started.
I have to say, yesterday's win at West Ham, probably might be the Arsenal game I've enjoyed most this season. There was, it had a real sort of cup tie atmosphere, and it was a big, big win, a really important 3 points.
Mm.
I don't want to say turning point, but, you know, you never know.
Mm. All right, let's have one more.
Okay, let's have one more. Oh, I've got a good one, actually.
All right, okay.
Right, this is from Gunners Down Under. I don't know where they're based, but they ask, you're trapped in a room with Jose Mourinho and Phil Collins. You have a pistol with one bullet. What do you do?
Is there any chance of ever getting out of the room?
No, you're trapped in this room.
Forever?
Indefinitely. Like Simon Mignolet, trapped on the substitutes bench.
But he's back. He's playing. He played their last game. That's a bad...
That was a bad example.
That was a bad example.
Okay.
It would depend. If I was trapped in this room forever and ever and ever, I'd probably shoot myself.
Because is there any way you could trick them into putting their heads near enough to each other that you could take them both with one shot?
Well, you wouldn't need to trick them. You've got a gun, so you could make them. But my point is that if I was going to be trapped in there forever, it would be just better for me to put myself out of my misery and then know that they would have to resort to cannibalism to stay alive. They would have to eat my rotting flesh. So, yeah. I mean, the other obvious answer is you shoot one of them and beat the other one to death with the pistol, or tear off Mourinho's arm and beat Phil Collins to death with Mourinho's arm, or something like that. But, you know, again, it depends on the level of trappedness. If I was only going to be trapped for a couple of days,
yeah,
I would befriend them sneakily.
Okay.
And then as we were being released, and they were walking out, I go, gents, you walk out ahead, and then boom, straight through. That's how you do it.
I see. It's like you've done this before.
It is like I've considered it.
Yeah, exactly, at some length.
In the past. What would you do?
What would I do? Well, as you know, I love Phil Collins. I love the music of Phil Collins. his soundtrack to the animated film Tarzan is very moving.
Mm.
But I, what would I do? I don't know. I mean, the thing is, these sort of pantomime villains, you kind of need them, don't you? Especially at this time of year. I mean, Mourinho's histrionics yesterday, including his bizarre pronunciation of Fabregas, were a wonder to behold.
What did he call Fabregas?
I think it was Fabregas or something. I mean,
oh, he doesn't
correct.
Deserve him.
Yeah, I know. It's disgraceful.
That was hilarious, though, that there's some kind of campaign against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Because, what, they don't dive? I mean, did he not see the game last week when three of his players dived? Quite obviously.
Very bizarre.
Yes, it's almost, now, this could be crazy, but it's almost as if he was creating a story to deflect from the poor performance of his own team.
I mean, that's a conspiracy theory and a half there.
Yeah. But people fall for it all the time.
I know. It's mad. And also, what drives me crazy is looking at my Twitter timeline now. I saw a few journalists complaining, saying, I wish managers wouldn't talk about referees. It's so boring having to read this again and again. I was like, but you're literally writing it up and printing it. You're choosing that as the angle to lead on. So surreal. And it is boring. I mean, you know, let's talk about the football.
Yeah.
But what would I do? I'd kill Mourinho. Because, you know, let's face it, without him, Chelsea are not quite the force. You know, and I think, if anything, hopefully Phil Collins would then be appointed as his successor as Chelsea manager.
Or you could frame Phil Collins for the murder.
That is smart.
Yeah, that's what you could do. Kill Mourinho and then put the gun in Phil Collins' hand and then, you know, guards, look what Phil Collins did to Jose Mourinho. And then Phil Collins would then be sent away to Alcatraz forever.
Two birds, one bullet.
Yes. I've got one final one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it comes from Rory Gollifer.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to know, would you rather have infinite eels or bees that have a sexual attraction to you?
Okay, now, I need to ask a question about this question. This is why I didn't choose it, because I think there's discrepancy. Is it infinite eels or bees that have a sexual attraction to you? So the eels and the bees are both sexually attracted. Or is it just infinite eels or some bees that are sexually attracted to
this
you?
Is where a comma would have come in handy.
Yeah.
I'm going with the... Given the fact they didn't start the question with a capital letter, I'm suggesting that Rory's... His punctuation is not, you know, it's not one of his main considerations.
Sure, so he was in a hurry. He knew he had to get the question in. It was obviously urgent.
My reading of the question is, would you rather have infinite eels or bees that have a sexual attraction to you, rather than infinite eels or bees that have a sexual attraction to you?
Okay. Okay, that's good, because eels with a sexual attraction to me does sound really frightening.
Bit slithery.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff they could get up to would be awful. So I would go for... And when you say I have them, do you mean I just own them?
Yeah, I guess you could deploy them as an army or as a helper eels for people that need their shopping taken up.
I mean,
old
I'm
ladies.
Definitely going with the eels because I feel like I'm the victim of the bees. I feel like bees being attracted to me won't end well.
No.
Yeah, I can... I sound sore in every respect. So I'm going to go for the infinite eels, and that could be like, I could be a superhero, and whenever I needed, I could summon the eels. Because I don't know, and no one likes eels, do they? I mean, and everyone would be shit scared of infinite eels.
Yeah, but they're delicious, though, eels.
No, but these are live eels, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't eat them live.
Do you eat eels? Do you eat, like, jellied eels?
Not jellied eels, but you can get eel sushi.
Oh, yeah, so you can.
And it's very, very delicious.
Mm.
So they're
creepy, though, aren't they?
They're like water snakes of some kind.
I've seen them. I've seen them on the documentaries. I'd choose infinite eels.
All right.
I would unleash them on my foes. I mean, maybe even in that cell with Mourinho and Phil Collins.
Nice.
That would solve the problem. What do you want out of those two?
I'm going to go for the bees.
Why?
Well... Because
just you're very vain and you like the idea of a whole swarm of bees being attracted to you.
No, well, all the bees would just be there going like, oh, you're so hot. And I could get the bees then on the promise of some sexual encounter in the future, which is never going to happen because I just don't have a thing for bees in that way.
Mm.
But you could make them do things for you like a love-struck teenager. Who is, captivated by a girl who then gets him to go and run errands for her because she's too lazy to do them. And he's thinking, maybe I'll get off with her later. But she's never going to get off with him. So that's what I would do. I would use the bees to do tasks for me.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't quite know what tasks. I would start probably with something easy.
Make honey,
yeah. Yeah.
Something they're accustomed to.
Yeah, exactly. And then you could, you know, make them into like orc bees, bringing it back to the start of this podcast. You could create evil bees that could go and do your bidding.
Very good.
Yeah.
The Saruman of the bee world.
Absolutely. What you could do, though, is do humanity a service by training your bees to go and sting everybody who is allergic to bee stings, right? And all
eradicate that genetic weakness.
Exactly. The human being would be a better thing for it.
My aunt is allergic to bee stings, and she ate a cake with a bee on it, a real bee.
Why would she do that?
I believe it was some kind of accident.
Right.
Either that or she thought it was sort of an iced bee.
She was going, I can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
This is a delicious way out.
A bizarre suicide bid, yeah. She'd been waiting for that moment and she saw the bee on the cake. And she was all right. She was hospitalised. So she wasn't that all right. But she she got out. It's fine. They released her eventually. But it was very dramatic. But I remember just as a child being told about this and just wondering... exactly how that came about.
Yeah.
I think if I was going to eat a cake and there was a bee on it, I would have noticed.
I would choose a different slice.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Okay, well, look, as always, we're answering the big questions here on this podcast.
Indeed, yeah.
All right, well, look, we're going to do it again next Monday for Arscast Extra 49, I think. So for now, thank you for listening. I suppose we should say given the week that's in it, that, well, I can't speak for you, but I'd like to wish everybody a very happy new year. All the best.
Mm-hmm. No, I'll join you in that, actually.
That's good, because it would have been slightly curmudgeonly of you, had you not. Yeah. If you decided, fuck them. That would have been bad. But have a very happy new year, everybody. We will talk to you in 2015.
The future.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.